In times of fear and doubt, chaos and question, we're the one true source for strength, safety, and certainty. Common men with uncommon passions to protect and serve, defend and preserve our family, our life, and our freedom. Founded on the key principle that we must become present, active, and engaged fathers, committed to lead, learn, and love ourselves and our family unconditionally. Willing and able to take action against the resistance with honor and integrity by creating the daily discipline necessary to build our body, strengthen our minds, and expand our spirit. Committed and dedicated men who forbid the past to define their current reality. I am that man. My name is Luke Kayyem. I am a father of the future.
Welcome to the Fathers of the Future podcast. My name is Luke Kayyem, and I am here with my brother, Pete Vanderveen. Aloha.
Aloha, brother.
Two Holly boys in Scottsdale, Arizona, saying aloha. You're a little more local than me. You do have an 808 area code on your cell phone, but you weren't born and raised in Hawaii. You lived there for some time.
Yes, sir.
Let's start there, because now you're obviously here in AZ. How'd you get there?
Long story, but we were in Hawaii every year for several months, just renting a house and just living there, enjoying the Maui life, just the romantic step away from the rat race and just focus on family. And it was a time of rekindling every year. And a friend of mine's a preacher there at Hope Chapel in Kihei, and got to know some friends and went to some barbecues, and one thing led to another, and I had some business people I met, and they were fitness entrepreneurs, and they had some ideas, and one thing I do professionally is build companies. So when I got to talking and they had some real table talk kind of coffee ideas, I was the one that said, well, when are we going to get going? And they were like, well, we've been looking for a guy to really help us take it to the next level. And that's where the conversation started. And at that point, it was all the chips were, we cashed everything in and moved to the Maui Islands and just set up shop. And then that was kind of day one of that chapter of our life.
And how long were you there for?
We were in Hawaii for a little over a year.
Okay. That's that sweet spot of like, all right, do I stay or do I go? And so did you come back to Arizona, or were you here prior? Where were you guys before Hawaii?
So we had spent some time in Argentina, had spent some time in Canada, had spent some time in Europe and Holland. So we've really spent chapters in multiple countries over the years.
Tell us a little bit briefly about your background in ExxonMobil, or what you can share. The listeners can understand a little bit high level from building companies and businesses, founding. One of the things we are going to talk about is one of your fitness brands called Eat the Frog Fitness, which is one of, not quite my favorite Mark Twain quote. My favorite Mark Twain quote is, I never let school interfere with my education.
Right.
But Eat the Frog First is a top fiver. We won't talk about that, but talk to us more about, you know, raising your family, building your family in that executive grind world where you were an ATM for a few years. That was your job.
Mm-hmm.
What did that do to you? How long were you there for? And what were some of the responsibilities that you had?
Well, I've always been driven. I think I have a work ethic that I got from my parents, which were farmers, and I've always had just a hunger to really kick those doubters in the balls that were the ones that are like, you'll never make it, or you'll never be what you think you are, or don't dream so big, that's bullshit. And I've always had a hunger to really push through that and be like, if you fucking doubt me, I will break you. Like, it's just been a mantra of mine that, but it's also got me into trouble sometimes. And so it's really led me to try to break through those barriers, push through those glass ceilings, and really push to find success in areas that maybe others hadn't seen, or I'd bootstrap my way to the top. So it's what led me to start the fitness company. Led me to really want to redefine and re-engineer the fitness industry from the ground up, just because of all the the phonies and the boot camp moms that were doing the same shit that everyone's been doing for 20 years since, you know, just since the
Billy Banks.
And even before Billy Banks with the striped red shorts, right? Like getting it on Sunday morning and 7 a.m. on your local news radio. But for me, it was taking the phony out of fitness and really bringing intentionality back to it, bringing a purpose, bringing authenticity and good practice, good health. For me, fitness isn't a niche. It's a lifestyle. So for us, it was bringing a wellness to that industry and an authenticity, which was really based on professional athletics, which my partner being a gold medal Olympian in Athens and Beijing, there's no more purist than him being a decathlete, which is you're disciplined in 10 sports. You're considered the world's best athlete when you're at the top. So for us, it was bringing that to the average person, helping the average person realize that if you're on the treadmill for 40 minutes a day, you're not really achieving anything special. Or if you're a guy working arms and chest, you're also just, you're a far cry from what you need to be or what you should be doing.
Now, I don't have your business partner on the show, but I might question who is the fittest man in the world, a decathlete or a CrossFit competitor at the highest level. I won't argue that with you today. Eat the Frog does have a faith-based background.
It does, yes, sir.
Which I was unaware of, seeing the local Eat the Frog and then meeting you and your one of your business partners. That's what intrigued me more than anything, right? Because we are in a very vanilla world right now where we have to be cautious of offending everyone in this cancel culture. And yet you guys have continued to grow even through this pandemic, which was hard for a lot of fitness franchises to do. You're still open and you're still growing. How does that faith base work into not only the members, but also the team?
What our focus was from day one is to really show, and if need to, use words. So that's been our kind of our principle and our mantra. And we are not religious people. We're people that believe in a faith. We believe in a higher power. So for us, it was important to show people that we live with a higher purpose. We live with an endeavor to show people love. And that was kind of the founding principle of our company, which was we want people to be empowered through fitness. We want people to realize that there's more to life than fitness, but your fitness is your tool to success. And it's one of the instruments that you should be using daily to achieve the best life that you can live possibly. But in that journey, other areas of your life need to come into play, spirituality being one of them. And that's why for us, we want people to make an intentional step towards their faith, but we wanted to show them that we were going to lead the charge by showing them that they're mattered or that they matter and that we love them. And that's why in our all of our studios, we show people that they're not just a number. They're not just a key fob, that they're human. They're a mom, they're a dad, they're an entrepreneur, they're a business leader, they're a college student, but we want to know who they are, you know, what they're about, where they're from, what their interests are, who their kids are. We want to understand, like, what's their journey. We want to come alongside them. So for us, that too is part of the fitness industry that we wanted to reverse and flip on its head, which was that you're not just member number 4,602. Like for us, it was like you're John, you live in Kierland Heights, you work at Fidelity Investments. Like we want to know who you are. We want to know that you're a local football coach. We want to invest into you, your life. We want to know what makes you tick. So that was for us kind of the start of it. And then just that journey of just walking alongside you, helping you see and feel that there's a different atmosphere here where you're participating in a team, you're participating in a family, and you matter. And now you're coming to work out, but you're also coming to be inspired, challenged, fueled, and really where people can invest into you. And all of that was really the faith that we were showing rather than speaking and preaching.
And that started at a barbecue in Maui.
Started at a barbecue in Maui.
A lot of people don't know that if you have a little bit of work ethic and a lot of bit of hustle, you can live in Hawaii very well and be successful at it.
Yeah.
It's the alternative that most people get stuck in. I spent a good solid year of my adult life in Maui when I was single without kids. And I feel that I really needed that. You know, I wasn't in a fraternity. I wasn't a four-year college guy. So having, you know, that brotherhood of guys that, you know, sometimes it's nasty and dirty and stinky. And I had a house and a condo and my buddies were in the condo. We didn't have the work ethic that we now have. But every time I go back to Hawaii, I constantly remind myself that if you just hustled hard, you could make it there, regardless of the price of gas or milk. And so you came back after a year, and was that pre or post Exxon? Because I do want to get into that Exxon piece, because that is a piece of your past, mm-hmm. which has helped you become who you are today.
Right.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Those lessons learned have made you realize a whole lot more is out there than just working.
Right. Yeah, that was pre-Exxon. So then I spent roughly 2 years with the company, and we got to a point where we were starting to get lift off. But cash flow was a bit of a concern. So I had done majority of the heavy lifting to get the company off the ground, to get the framework and the systems. What we feel and experience today is kind of what that framework are laid. So then it became more of a copy paste model. So then I stepped away because I had other options, whereas other parts of our team were critical for the expansion. And that's not really the place where I really enjoy to be. Like, I like to build something from scratch, or I like to really multiply. But when you kind of get into that daily grind, it's not really my thing. So it was a good opportunity for me to step away into a new challenge. And then that's when I entered ExxonMobil.
And what kind of roller coaster ride was that? How many years total?
I was just shy of 5 years.
So did you have, you know, culture shock going from Maui laid back to now jet setting around the world, literally putting out fires?
Well, Maui was a great place. Maui's got like a romantic vibe where you just, that aloha culture, that ohana, it's tranquil, it's peaceful, it's cup filling. For me, it was a struggle because I'm like that farm boy, Texas work attitude guy where it's like you just grind and work long hours, get up early, go to bed late. 90 hour weeks was normal for me. So when you go to Maui and no one wants to work because everyone's surfing, it was a challenge because if you're hustling and no one's hustling around you, we tried opening up locations there. We were dealing with the Maui culture, the Maui cronyism. Like, it was just all this stuff that we dealt with that it's, you love the life, but the work and the work atmosphere there is very challenging. And unfortunately, it's a little bit corrupt too. The locals get away with everything unpermitted, unlicensed, on anything. And then you come there as a howley, you got to dot every I, cross every T. You need all the licenses, all the permits. And there's two standards going on. So it's a challenge. So it was great to live there. It was a challenge to work there. So coming back to the mainland was a great move for us corporately. And it was an opportunity for me to kind of get back into my momentum and do things at my pace.
And did you have any roots here in Arizona prior to that?
So corporately, we had roots here. And I've got godparents that live in the valley here. So it was great to come and move beside them and have our kids connect again, or have my kids connect with their grandparents. So that was a blessing. And then corporately, we moved Eat the Frog actually to Phoenix. So that's what brought us here.
As headquarters. And currently, where are you with franchisees?
We have 30 plus locations and another 10 in the pipeline opening up in the next 6 months.
Awesome. So still growing through the shifts and challenges of the fitness industry. You know, we hit it off right away. I'm a lifelong, not only fitness enthusiast, but a coach. And I've gone through every rabbit hole known to man of service, right? Of one-on-one trainings, micro studio, big globo gym, CrossFit, sick fit, you know, the potential to franchise. And my wife and I, we opted out before we wrote that $250,000 franchise tax board check. Mm-hmm. To play that game,
right?
You wrote it. You're all in,
uh-huh.
And now you're 30 plus 10 on the way. We'll get to a point at the end of this where what we call shameless self promotion, so people who are listening can learn more about that model. But one of the things that struck me, which is different than a lot of these other fitness brands, was the systems, the standards, and the structure that you guys created. The operations manual, as we used to call it in our business.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game changer. That's the separator. That's the framework,
right,
for success. And once you have a proven model, then you can replicate.
Mm-hmm.
That first proven model, was that here? Where was the first Eat the Frog Fitness?
The first, we had a beta facility up in Washington State, up in Pacific Northwest, so Anacortes. We had a studio within a big box facility that ran for 2 to 3 years. It's still in operation today, but we actually had two facilities there in neighboring towns, Oak Harbor and Anacortes. And then our first standalone unit was here in North Scottsdale.
And now how many in Phoenix Metro?
There are three.
Greatest competition on the market. Now, when I was in the micro box space, we didn't have F45 or Orange Theory. They hadn't existed yet.
Right.
And we've seen them capitalize, mm-hmm. right? F45 after Orange Theory. What has sort of been your competitive advantage as you look at some of these other guys, right? What is your differentiator? I understand the ability to make somebody feel unique,
mm-hmm.
right? Quality over quantity, which is the original challenge with the health club business.
Right.
The model is based on lowest barrier to the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and then get as many people as you can to not show up.
Right.
Right. So this is completely counter to that.
Right.
Group classes, privately trained. You mentioned the professional sports piece. Could you describe that to some of the listeners as well? You know, not only from the fitness professional side, but from the membership side. If somebody's listening to this and,
right,
and they
right.
want to experience or try something different.
I think what really, in our attempts to really redefine fitness, like you said, quality over quantity was a big focus. So for us, really taking a lot of the fitness world is defined by theoretical knowledge, not really practical knowledge. So you don't have a lot of pro athletes detest professional fitness centers just because they're like, these guys are phony bitches. Like this is a joke. This isn't even training. And they see the guys doing lifting with ego, and they see the women chasing around like hamsters on hamster wheels and not really, neither one of them is getting a workout. So a lot of the pro football players, pro basketball players, Olympians that I know just detest health clubs for that reason alone. So what we really did was try to bring professional athletics to the average person, but with that comes all the complexity. So you have to really simplify it and then help the average user understand that this isn't a daunting experience, because most people want to be a professional athlete. They idolize that athlete and they want to be like them. They want to look like them. But then when it comes time to show up and work like them, they're gone. Like they're not there. They're not willing to do that. And women are intimidated and men just bitch out. So that was a barrier to entry for us, or a barrier to success. So we had to really simplify it, water it down, and then approach them in a respect where it's like you can achieve success by doing the same things as them, but not necessarily to the intensity then as them, or the complexity as them, or the duration that they're doing it. So that was kind of our entry point of taking that fundamental, that scientific extensive level of professional athletic training and bringing it to a simplified level.
Train like a high level athlete based on your current level.
Right.
Not on a professional athlete's current
Correct.
Level.
Yeah. So we really told people we meet you where you're at. So And that's where we really were able to capitalize on being a differentiator in the marketplace. Is we were able to do so many things, bring customization, bring personalization, and really focus on who was our avatar, because we had so many levels of customization that allows an obese individual that's couldn't work out at Orange Theory, or was too heavy to work out at an average fitness center, or didn't have the confidence or the knowledge, we could work with that person. We could take someone that's a war vet that has prosthetics, that couldn't work out at it, couldn't. Orange Theory is very high cardio, and you're doing sprinting cardio. So most people can't sprint because of ailments, back problems, knee problems, you name it, shin splints. So there's a lot of people that don't fit that avatar. And then there's a lot of people that don't know enough, and they don't fit the big box because they can't afford a trainer at $80 an hour. They can't see results because they go there, they don't know what they're doing. They can only watch so much YouTube before they just zone out. Eventually they just disappear because they just lost all hope and a desire to show up and not see results. So there's just a high turnover. There's a high level of defeat within the industry in terms of the memberships or in terms of the members themselves. So for us, it was just really being intentional, helping people, guiding them, walking side by side, and making sure that whatever that person came in with, we help them get to the next level. So whatever that takes, and a lot of our systems allow us to, we can take a pro level athlete and we can take someone that can't even fit within any fitness model just because of their health or their obesity levels or whatever they have, their knee replacements, you name it, or even elderly. We have people that are 85 plus that can come and work out alongside a pro level athlete, and neither one of them is under challenged.
Clear. So back to the executive world, specifically in Exxon, it was a 5-year journey. But before we do that, I have to set the frame for your stature. Okay. And so we're this is purely audible, but when I first met you, I was like, holy fuck, you are the scariest man I have met in a while. And I consider myself to be pretty scary looking. Can you give us some height and weight numbers here before we get, because what I'm attempting to frame here is that this man in the creative chair of a fitness franchise, also putting on a suit and tie to go and fly around the world and manage teams of hundreds of people at the executive level in a company like ExxonMobil. And so I got to imagine some of the places you went, especially overseas, they probably thought of you as, you know, protection, security.
Mm-hmm.
You're six.
Six.
Two.
60 right now.
10% body fat?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You're a fucking solid brick, which can help with leverage.
Yep.
In any circumstance, as long as you use that power for good.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't be on the show if you didn't do that.
That's right.
But I got to imagine that when you were putting on, you know, the executive apparel, that was much different than the lifestyle you were living in Maui and in the fitness world. It was completely different than anything you had really gotten used to, you had been a part of before.
Right.
And so that 5-year journey, give us that piece from start to ultimately when you decided to move on.
Mm-hmm.
What some of your roles, responsibilities were. It's a Fortune 50 company, correct?
Fortune 5.
Fortune 5 company, yeah.
Yeah, they're big.
Yeah.
For me, I have an underlying desire to just create massive excellence. So whether it's whether it was fitness, whether it was just in helping others, whether it was energy, whether it was real estate, I just had a hunger to find opportunities to create extensive growth. So if it was fitness, it was like, how do we exploit the market? How do we do better? How do we improve on the status quo? How do we bring excellence to the market? When I approached ExxonMobil, it was the same opportunity. We're taking a massive company that was doing things in what I saw to be an inefficient manner. There was extensive operations. There was extensive expansion. There was extensive pressure from shareholders, from the marketplace, from independence or the energy independent venture of the administration at the time. And all of that was driving a massive need for optimization. And when I walked into that environment, there was they were bleeding millions a day, tens of millions per month and hundreds of millions per year. So there was a massive need for continuous improvement culture and all these tools and systems that just were natural to me and that I was able to institute in any occupation that I had. So I came into that environment really seeking to, at the simplest level, which was empower human capital. So what I did is I came in and I found the problems. I sought out the systems and I sought out the day-to-day problems, the areas where we had the massive limiters, the problems, the root cause analysis. I really stood up at 30,000 feet, looked down at the big picture, sought out the problems, and then I went deep to go root out all those problems. And then from that point, it became an endeavor of teaching people the problems, teaching them new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things, and then empowering them to achieve those objectives so that we could reach that level of success. So really, it was just really helping everyone unearth, you know, the problems, find proper solutions, not blame anyone, but just understand like what is really the root of this issue, why, and then quantifying the mistakes and then turning that into a successful operation moving forward. So that's what I've done in any executive level position that I've held. But in Exxon, it was daunting. It was a $12 billion operation that I was overseeing the optimization of 1,000 people. So there was a lot of people, a lot of opinions, a lot of ego, a lot of money, and a lot of expectation and pressure. So it was exciting. It was fun. It was a challenge. I was able to blow and go, which I do well, but it did take its toll on me. It took its toll on my relationship with my wife. It took its toll on my relationship with my kids. I did lose focus at some point where I became too focused on that endeavor and lost focus of other endeavors.
Quick hit, what do you miss most?
I think just the high fidelity, high function environment that's just adrenaline charged. Like when I was pulling levers that were moving the needle tens of millions, sometimes a minute, it's pretty rewarding to have that kind of an impact. So I think it was empowering that many people, having that kind of a positive impact on a culture, and taking a corporation like that and really moving that Titanic away from the iceberg and just seeing that kind of success, the respect and I really felt like I was a massive change in that organization in terms of just bringing my desire to empower people and to bless people and to take every one of those 1,000 people and help them realize that they matter. Really helped me get buy-in into what my vision was, and it helped me got a lot of respect from the other executives that saw that we were able to create a culture change, a culture shift to that degree, with an underlying principle of just showing love. And I never brought religion into the equation. I would definitely, you know, speak to people, but for me that wasn't the purpose. My purpose was just to make a ridiculous amount of change and impact. And then I knew that if I was that rising tide, I know I could raise all the ships in the bay.
What will you never miss again?
I will never miss having thousands of phone calls 24 hours a day for years on end.
Forget emails, phone calls, inbound.
My phone blew up. And it's an industry that never stops and never sleeps. So I had hundreds of days that I would sleep 2 hours a night, and I'd come home Friday night, sleep in my bed, watch my kids play football Saturday, and I'd be on the next jet Sunday morning. So I paid mortgage on a house I never lived in, lived a life that my family was never part of, and that's the part I'll never miss.
House poor, car poor, depending on the age of the guys listening here, purchase poor, whatever it may be. The ego is attached to most acquisitions. And I believe through our conversations in deep work the last couple months, we've both been able to dull our ego by looking into each other, right? It's truly a powerful tool when you understand it, right? You can't kill the ego, It needs to live. It gets us up in the morning. It drives us places. It has us, you know, making relentless phone calls to create opportunities. But the purchase acquisition ego, and especially today with how quick and easy it is to buy and you know, from a click of a button. My daughter shared with me the other day that she has 13 bathing suits. I have 3 pairs of board shorts. One's 10 years old, one's 5 years old, and one I got for Christmas. Yep. I don't need the one I got for Christmas.
Right.
So it goes in a pile of stuff that I may need.
Right.
I wear 2 bathing suits. It's taken me 40 some years to begin to understand what truly matters. There's no price on peace. There's no price on happiness. There's a price on buying things. Your ego has shifted dramatically from Maui to Exxon to now this current reality. Let's talk a little bit more about how, since leaving Exxon, you've begun to rebuild, reestablish, recreate a phenomenal relationship, not only with yourself, but with your wife and with your kids. When you finally left, did it hit you immediately? Or was it one of those things where you came back home and you saw, holy shit, I've been disengaged. I've been not only physically not present, but maybe even emotionally not present in their lives. When did it hit you from a linear timeline space?
It was definitely an organic transition. I know when I was in the latter times at Exxon, when I was jet setting back and forth, there was times where I'd fly out of Sky Harbor in Phoenix and I would just be looking over the city and I was like, I don't know how this ends, but this ain't right. Like I just know I just spent 12 hours with my family and I'm gone again and I won't talk to them. I was so busy that I literally wouldn't talk to them all week. And then I'd come home to a resentful wife and then I'd be like, listen, woman, like you don't even know what I'm up to and you have like, look what I'm doing for you. And I had this ego, but I knew things were starting to stretch and things were starting to tear for me. And so when it first ended, it was a void. It was like a vacancy, like a vacuum for me that I went from all this high function, high accomplishment environment to kind of nothingness. And it was a bad place to be for me. Cause I just woke up without purpose and I was angry. I was miserable. I was defeated and it took me a long time. Like I knew it was necessary, but I really fought it. And it took me some time. It took me probably several months to finally get to a place where I could see the pros outweighing the cons. And even then it took me several more months of just kind of understanding the series of events and what I had done wrong or what I had done right and why this was purposeful for my life.
So a little over an hour ago, we had a one-on-one high performance coaching session. And as we are designing some 2022 targets, the current reality showed a quantifiable tracking score of your relationship with both your kids.
Right.
And I kind of laughed because I've been there, right? Body fat's 10%, house mortgage is $220,000. I've got quantifiable numbers, right? I have data in order to then improve those numbers.
Right.
A lot harder in your mindset, in your spirituality, in your relationships with your wife and your kids. And so I said, hey, be careful with this, right? If we give ourselves a score of how we believe we are to our son, and that score is different than how we are to our daughter, we're automatically putting ourselves into a comparison analysis that we can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And so your relationship with each child, your daughter being the oldest, 13?
Yep.
And your son, 11?
Right.
I know you're Canadian, but we call it, you know, Irish twins in our house, right? They're 18 months apart.
Right,
yours,
right.
Yours are fairly close together. Mm-hmm. That place that you were, or the void that you were in, how did it come to a realization that what was once very important to you is no longer? And what was once not that important to you, not to say that your family was never that important to you, but they were not prioritized the way that they are now.
Right.
You were not prioritized the way that you are now.
Mm-hmm.
You were working for a Fortune 5 company, getting paid to do what they said, and you did it well. And that was your life. And because of that, everything else, not necessarily didn't get touched, but not at the rate that you wanted it to, or the rate that you're at now. Mm-hmm. And so as you look at that, for me, I get super fucking emotional about my daughter. You know, my son, my dude, my man, like, he's going to have to figure some shit out. It took me a decade of rock bottom and then a decade of surface to get to the decade of flying, right? It's a 30-year journey mm-hmm. from self-sabotage as a young teenager, you know, addicted to the limelight and the party scene and drugs and alcohol and women, whatever, disconnection to get to this place of realization, self-realization. So I'm not worried about my son.
Right.
But my daughter, it's crazy how, you know, I can just like have a conversation with her and just, it hits me, mm-hmm. you know. For me, in my past, she's a big reason why I changed my life.
Right.
Had I had another son, I don't know if I would have made some of these conscious choices. I quit drinking, got my shit together, got focused, got spiritual, got all kinds of things because of this little woman. Talk to me about the dynamic of your two and your own personal battle of improving those scores with each of them. And let's get some names here. Give us some substance on it.
Yeah, I think I grew up in an environment where affection and work ethic were two separate silos. So my family is very work focused, very broken in terms of affection. So I've grown up with a work ethic, which is what even attracted us to become American citizens and have to really engage into this capitalistic society. That fed my soul from day one. And it's just been part of my journey. And I've always been a challenged person where if someone said you can't accomplish X, Y, or Z, I was going to damn well prove you that I could. And with Exxon, it was like, if you could, they always had a saying that they'd bow you up. So if your wheelbarrow was full and you could handle more, they'd just keep loading it up. And I was that executive that it's like, I'll lift as much as you can give me and then I'll come back for more. But what it did is it caused me to lose focus. It caused me to focus so much on the task at hand and the challenges that were there, which were monumental in a company that had $234 billion in revenue per year. So when you look at numbers like that, when that would just sap all your energy, it would sap anyone's energy because it's so consuming. What it caused me to do is I put all my focus on success. And when I looked back, I realized that my kids, I couldn't balance that equation. And I realized over time that my daughter, she was growing up without me. My wife was single mom and I was absentee. And then when my ego was in the wrong place and my mindset was wrong, I blame my wife for not supporting me. I blame my wife for not whining and dining me when I came home or being so thankful for all this hard work that I had done out of state. And I really took it personal rather than seeing how I was absentee. I was going away and leaving her to fend for herself for 5 days at a time. And when those kids would come home and cry, or those kids would come home and struggle with bullying or struggle with not making the team or struggling with dropping a pass in the football game, like, she had to deal with that. And I was nowhere to be found. And I was just focused on one thing. So for me, this has been a season where I've had to realize that my wife had all the reason in the world to be upset at me. And I realized that I had lost focus, and I realized that I had been absentee as a father and a husband. And I realized that all I had focused on was those big six-figure checks and a purpose that was filled with adrenaline and rewards from executives that gave you that attaboy every week. And it was an adrenaline show that caused me to lose focus of the things that really mattered in my life, which was my kids and my legacy.
Clear. So we come to this current reality, right? This present moment. And obviously things have definitely shifted in your life, right? Personally and professionally. Tell us a little bit about this path of what you're building and creating with lifestyle at the top frame, your family and your lifestyle, your own personal, you know, health, right? And not just the physical health, right? Because you are a specimen physically, mm-hmm. but some of the other pieces of health that oftentimes we don't focus on. Connection, right? Your ability to connect with yourself, to have time to prioritize you in order to be the best you can be for them, but while also delivering a profound message and really continuing to help both individuals and companies. So tell us kind of where you're at with what you're doing and this new season of your business.
Well, I think if I go back, it's interesting how I had these revelations 5-10 years back where I did a lot of reading, but it was kind of a sprint. It was these segmented sprint seasons where I would just read a whole bunch of Audibles. I'd spend $200 on Audible books and just try to cram them in. But then busyness would take over and I'd kind of step away from that intentionality. And this season has really taught me that needs to be more of a concrete pillar, like something that's immovable in my life. It's non-negotiable. So for me, this season has been growing, keeping focus on what's important, and really stepping away from those superficial things, which is kind of money and success. But by putting the things that are important first, putting those big rocks in place first, and then worrying about all the other things. And also it's been a mindset shift of certainly taking pride in making a significant income was rewarding. You have to ask yourself at what cost. And I think for me, the cost was, I can't replace my kids. I can't replace my wife. I can't replace that time. I can go make more money one day. And if in this season I have to sacrifice some income for personal gain, for family gain, that's been a mindset shift that I've had to experience and basically be comfortable with and actually welcome that into the season. So it's been a growing and it's been a malleable time where I've had to just change as a person. I've had to put ego aside. I've had to put them first. I've had to really take a knee in terms of just realizing I fucked up a lot. I didn't make mistakes with drugs or alcohol, but I did make an ego and adrenaline my idol, so to speak. And I didn't do it intentionally, but success became, my wife literally said, like, your success is your bride. And she was right on the mark. So I think for me in this season, when I look back, it's actually ironic that I've always had a hunger to really create a leadership summit for companies and for people. My fitness endeavors were to empower people. My vocational endeavors were to empower people, were to empower corporations, but through empowering people, because a corporation is really a sum of the people. So for me, I've always had it on my heart that I wanted to be impactful. I wanted to change people. I think a lot of times what drove me was being that little kid that people would kick to the side and be like, well, you're nothing. You'll be nobody. You'll achieve nothing in life. Like, now it's like in this season of my life, I look back and I realize like these were stepping stones that really created hunger in me to really be transformative. And I feel like in this journey, exiting Exxon and then working on myself and realizing those nuggets of information were truth. And the things that I sought at the time were really fictional and fake news. And now I've had the ability to really clear my mind and realize exactly what's important in life. So going forward, I have a hunger to really speak to myself 10 years back, 15 years back, 20 years back, and just really be sound, full, and inspirational to other people. So I have a hunger now to empower business leaders, and that's what your help for, you know, you helping me and my going through this journey has helped me to realize that I want to turn that hunger into reality. So I'm actually stepping out of that corporate executive role and I'm remarketing and rebranding myself as a as an executive transformative coach, so to speak. So I want to really take, my hunger is to take business leaders, to take entrepreneurial men. And my focus mainly is that avatar who is a man, but who is an executive leader running a corporation or looking to start a corporation or to looking to take a concept to market, whatever it is. I want to take that male, that leader, that entrepreneur, and I want to help them find incredible, you know, financial and corporate success, vocational success. I want to help them to achieve that, you know, that massive success. But what I want to do is I want to close the circle, and I want to make sure that they don't lose focus on what's important. I want them to make sure that they're living their best life holistically. And at 30,000 feet, they're well-rounded and they're well-balanced. And it comes back to one of the mantras with my fitness company, which was, we wanted to create well-rounded athletes. A decathlete is a well-rounded, like the most well-rounded athlete on earth. There's 10 disciplines that they are perfectly suited for. Whereas biceps and tris is not well-rounded. That's like one inflated tire and three flats. So for me now in this season, I want to help business leaders, executives be running on four inflated tires, whereas most of them have sacrificed their health, their mental state, their emotional state, their relational state for the pursuit of excellence in one sector. But everything else is just a complete dumpster fire. And that's for me, I see so many executives in Exxon. There's hundreds, if not thousands of executives in that corporation. There's 85,000 employees worldwide. But that's just an example. But everyone, franchisees, Subway owners, you know, car dealership salesmen, you name it, people in all sectors are sacrificing quality for quantity. And what I want to do in this endeavor in my life, or in this new season, is to really speak to myself 10 years back when I was doing the wrong things, and even speak to myself as a child and be that mentor, that father, that role model that's like, hey, dude, like, you're getting shit wrong. Let me help you. Let me get it right. Let me point you in the right direction. Let me help you get there. And that's why I feel a new passion to really, really help people live radical lives, help people be intentional fathers, be impactful husbands, be engaged as a father and a husband, but be incredibly successful in their careers too. And I think a lot of people don't realize that you can balance that equation, but a lot of people have no balance. All they've done is they've lost focus, and they're so focused on that rabbit scent that hound dog is just, you know, just running into, you know, it's like a Chinese finger trap. You get your finger so far in, you're fucked and you can't back out of it.
Coaching, leading, teaching, training, speaking are all part of this new place for you. And it's stuff you've already done. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about Eat the Frog for those listening as well. How can they learn a little bit more? We call this shameless self-promotion.
Right.
But where the fitness guys who know me, know my past, know through CrossFit and SickFit, but you know, this might be an opportunity for them to be a part of a growing franchise.
Right, right.
How do they learn more?
Eat the Frog Fitness. We're a national franchise, so we've got locations in, I believe, 21 states, and we're growing rapidly. We are what you consider a boutique fitness, and we have a lot of pre-programmed. You basically come into a framework that's all, you step onto a conveyor belt, you're assessed as an athlete, you run through athletic training. So you really have no input, because as an athlete, you're told what to do. You're not asked for your input. But we really do that to empower people, to help them get outside their own, get out of their own way and achieve success like an athlete would. So we coach them, we empower them. So we're franchising around the nation, and we're actively looking for investors. We're actively looking for franchisees. And we're excited about how we've made it through COVID. We've made it through the worst time ever. And we've actually had more success in these dire times because we've had to adapt and overcome. And we're excited to continue to move.
It also proves that regardless of the fear associated with today's media and society and even government, that people still need people. and they need association, and they need a place, and they need a foundation for a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That serves a much greater purpose than, well, we won't go down that rabbit hole, but what you're doing is helping people. And again, you know, I'm a lifelong fitness enthusiast. I understand the business model of membership. You can have a balance of both worlds. You can do good work. You can help people live greater lives, and you can have a thriving business. And I think for somebody listening who might be that corporate executive of the past that you were looking to do something different, this is a proven model, not only from a business standpoint, but from a fitness standpoint. What you explained in the very beginning, we see often, right? Great business model and marketing, terrible fitness program. Great fitness program, terrible marketing and business model. And so I truly believe that you and your staff, your team, your partners have created that perfect balance between both. And there's a mission, right? And the mission is not just buys and tries or getting lean and jacked and ripped. The mission is bigger. That's very valuable right now in today's society. So I honor you for that. If you are listening to this and you want to learn more about it, how can we find you? What's your personal contact information, website? Even tell us a little bit here, and I'll put this in the show notes, but about Triumph and the Performance Academy.
Yeah, so a little bit of background on the Triumph Performance Academy. That's my coaching company where I focus on helping business executives become well-rounded leaders, fathers and husbands. So really a spinoff of what you've been teaching. But for me, it's more focused on the business aspect while making sure that we don't leave those other important pieces in the dust. And the interesting thing is I lead girls basketball. I have a JV and a varsity team that I coach, and they actually started calling me Coach Triumph because I was really focusing on mindset and helping them really deal with the struggles that they have with in school and with broken family issues and all kinds of the pain that they're dealing with. And they called me Coach Triumph all season, and it just led me to realize that that I do want to help people become triumphant. I want men to become triumphant. I don't want men to be Ned Flanders or Homer Simpsons or the douchebags that you know Hollywood has painted men to be. And I think I could have easily become one of them, and I just refuse to settle for apathy or complacency. So my company, Triumph Performance Academy, is really that, where I want to help men. I really want to take what you've taught me and help me realize and kind of reflect on and really take that back into the corporate world. So you can look me up at triumphperformanceacademy.com. And then with my fitness company, it's called eatthefrogfitness.com. So you can look me up in either one of those, and you can email me at pete@triumphperformanceacademy.com anytime. And my phone number is 808-276-0017.
That's it, guys. There's no excuse, right? Worst case scenario, send the brother a text and let him know you heard his podcast and you love his story. Pete Vanderveen, Improving and Empowering Human Capital. When the title comes out in something that we say, it's a beautiful thing, man. I truly appreciate you, not just for being here, for sharing, for going deep and being authentic and genuine, but I truly appreciate you for the path that you're on. Most people in your space are completely disconnected from their reality. And we know this from interviewing, coaching, leading, you know, thousands of men, hours of doing this day in and day out, that once you get a glimpse of the life that you want to live, and you look back at the life that you were living, and you see how much more important and valuable and powerful this new life is, you never go back. And so I see that in you. I feel it in not only your language, but in your actions, brother. So from the bottom of my heart and the depths of my soul, I honor you as being a true father of the future and being here today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for all you've done. And thank you for, as you say it, kicking me in the nuts. And you just shook me out of my zombie-like state when I had focus on what I saw as a loss, when truly it's been a gain. So I thank you for your time. I thank you for your hunger to change people like me and make a difference in the world.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for being here today. If you got something valuable out of this episode, all we ask in return is that you simply pay it forward, share it, send it to a friend, text, email, put it on your social media. And if you really enjoyed it, please take the time to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We appreciate you for being here today. You could be anywhere in the world, but you chose to be here with us. Aloha.
Aloha.